Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood Strauss. We were supposed to hang out this week. I was in San Francisco for a 2K sports event, and you blew me off for really an awful reason. How's it going?
Yes, that awful reason was that my engagement ring came through, and I needed to, based on the scheduling, propose to my now fiance. But when you think about it, Zach, it really was the biggest slap in the face, because you could interpret events this way. You wanted to hang out with me, and I agreed to it. And then I looked at the situation, and I said, I am so desperate to get out of hanging out with Zach that I'm going to propose to my girlfriend.
Yeah, no, that's
going to invent this whole scenario.
That's a new tactic. It's usually like, oh, I got called into work, I can't do it. But no, I got to get engaged. That was a new one for me. I got to be honest. After you blew me off, yeah, I mean, you text me. You were very upfront about it. It was hours before we were supposed to hang out. You text me, very responsible of you. I was hoping she'd say no.
Obviously, my dog in the background disagrees. He's incensed over such a prospect.
Oh,
now that he's,
of course
he's been promised a role in the wedding.
Oh, ring bearer?
Yes, a ring bearer.
Okay.
As opposed to a distracting barker in the background.
Does this mean you have to do it in some kind of hills near the Bay Area? Because that seems to be the only place your dog exists.
Hey, man, he's a border collie mix. He's very mobile. He roams. We need to find the proper environment. Maybe it could be something really tricky where he bears the ring after collecting a few sheep and getting them into a filed line, and then runs up and then, I don't know, kicks the ring to me. Something cool.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
we've got a lot of time to plan this.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you have very unrealistic expectations of things your dog can do.
Yeah.
One, understand English. Two, play defense.
Yeah, we do play a little basketball. This is true. And I mean, this is a ridiculous topic to start out on, but this is a fun, dumb, hypothetical conversation I've been having with one Beckley Mason, which is, could you train a border collie potentially to be an above average NBA defensive player? Obviously, offensively, they'd be horrible, but could they at least be above average defense? What say you? And back to this ridiculous hypothetical.
It is ridiculous. Dogs can't play defense in the NBA. This is an air bud. There's no script here. As much as people want to believe that David Stern has scripted out the basketball season each year. Yes, dogs, one, love to go after bouncing balls. They really do. I can completely agree with you on that. However, all you have to do is dribble it over them. It's one Allen Iverson, you know, kind of hop step move over them. You're by them, and now you've got a 5-on-4 situation.
Well, the ball has to hit the ground when you dribble. And when it hits the ground, that's like batted away, as my dad does when we play basketball. But granted, he's half tricky lab. He's half lab, half border collie. They're border collies. They're trained in a sport called tie ball, and they reach speeds of up to 40 miles per hour. Basically, more than 10 miles per hour what Usain Bolt runs. So you could perhaps get a rangy defense, kind of run a zone with four people, almost like a box in one, and have the border collie just track the ball. When you do a cross-court pass, the collie would just be right there the second it got there. And yes, the closeouts would be a little weak, not having thumbs.
It would be like Ty Lawson trying to defend Steph Curry.
Yes, but you couldn't dribble. There'd be basketball players where they would just get it knocked away every time they tried to dribble. They are much faster and more agile than we are.
Here's,
you know,
I don't believe that in terms of basketball defense. I don't believe that at all. Two,
they change directions faster than we do. It's a fact.
There's a big difference between changing directions quickly to go, you know, chase something at the door and tracking basketball offense. And the other thing is that for years, fans in Sacramento just annoyed the hell out of Phil Jackson with cowbells on the sideline. One squeaky toy, this defense is in shambles. A squeaky toy, and it's over.
You are so wrong. This is you projecting what you know about your dog and other dogs. The border collie.
I don't even have a squeaky toy for this dog.
The border collie is hyper focused. They look at the ball. It's a laser lock. You can read about the border collie gaze. You can look it up. They
dog
would
whistles.
Not be distracted. But I'll tell you what could happen. Think
dog
of the
whistles.
Benefits. There is probably one player on the opposing team. Everybody in a selection of the population, there are a few people who are rationally scared of dogs over that phobia. That can be used to your advantage. That can really discombobulate an opponent. Also, think about when you're little, you get calls on flops. Yeah. Sure. Berea, whenever he's posted up, he falls over, he gets the whistle. Think about how many calls this border collie is going to get.
So they're not as nimble, they're not as agile as you believe, because you think it's going to fall all the time.
No, you can just have a command. You can have a short command, a play dead, if you will, and the border collie will flop.
Here's a rebuttal for that strategy. I've got an assistant coach on the sideline whose job is to blow a dog whistle. This is just a ridiculous hypothetical that a dog could play NBA defense. It's not like there's a game plan. You can't be like, oh, rotate. Oh, we need you to hedge this. We need you to be in help.
Just you track the ball. We play some sort of amoeba type shifting zone with four guys, and you just track the ball and steal it whenever somebody dribbles. This is your job.
Absolutely.
You 40 mile an hour moving adorable thing. You're a good boy. Yes, you are. That's what you're saying.
This is just asinine. It's completely asinine.
It's completely fun is what it is.
No, it's not fun. It's infuriating.
So anyway, moving from that, I do want to know about another virtual world that's not so hypothetical.
Look at you in the segue.
I know you'd appreciate a good segue. This whole NBA 2K14 thing, what's the deal there? Were you impressed?
I was very impressed. Like? First of all, I was amazed that they wanted me out there. That was nothing for full disclosure, it's nothing I set up. They asked me to come out there and set that up. There were such media members as Sekou Smith from NBA.com, uh-huh. Mark Spears from Yahoo. I mean, it was a who's who plus myself. And you like that fake humility there? Is that?
Yeah, I just think you're so full of it. You know that you're perfect for their target demo. You speak.
What, someone who spends a lot of time? Someone who spends a lot of time at home?
No, but you've got a rapport where you speak to the younger fan. You've got it down.
All I do is tell the younger fan how stupid they are.
Well, the younger fan likes that kind of treatment.
No, somebody...
That's very coachable.
Somebody yesterday, this was actually involving 2K, he was complaining. Well, he wasn't complaining. He was just like throwing a tantrum about something in 2K and directed it towards me because Ronnie 2K and I had tweeted each other. And so he included both of us on this. And he actually got quite angry when I told him he was entitled. because I don't know what he's gone through, apparently.
Oh, dude, you gotta read up on that guy.
I know.
You've got to really, I've been. It's hard. You don't know how you're gonna offend people. I don't want to launch into this because they want to hear about the 2K stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's
this wedding stuff is just difficult. You know, I mean,
sure.
This is a massive digression. I apologize. I apologize for hijacking it for the Ethan hour when we're about to talk video games, which everybody wants to know about.
What's great is you can just send this out as your announcement.
Oh, I can.
Your engagement announcement. You can just do that.
Well, you were offended. You were offended when I, canceled and hanging out with you for this proposal. Other people were offended that they weren't informed about it, and they just said it on Facebook and Twitter. This apparently is a way you can offend people that I did not know about.
It's insane. It's almost as insane as my dog could play NBA defense argument. But I think that, you're fine telling people everything throughout your day on Facebook or on Twitter, but if you mention that, hey, I got engaged before you give them a phone call, like you can't make 100 phone calls, right? Or are you supposed to? I guess I don't know.
I don't know. I had a friend, we actually played a little basketball an hour or two before I did this, and I didn't tell him I was going to do this, and he got very offended. We need to keep the listeners engaged because they want. Let's just if I throw a basketball name in there, maybe that will keep them engaged. Like my friend Dr. Julius Irving, my friend Dr. J. He was very offended. He was very offended by this and said that you have to collect the people who are close to you in your life and tell them before announcing it on Twitter. So the younger fan who we just mentioned, I don't know if he does that or if he's going to do that or if that's the protocol, but that's the way you can offend him. And he just kept saying again and again, just so you know, next time, and then I thought, like, what are you taking the under on my marriage?
Maybe. All right. Maybe next time is a child announcement.
Maybe it's, you know, my funeral. Like, hey, this is me from the grave, just so you know.
Yeah, or maybe just like, hey, my fiance, well, at this point, we'll just say your wife. My wife and I have acquired a 2-year-old from China.
You just can't announce that on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know if you're planning on adopting, but you know.
Ah, man, the things you have to worry about. But 2K, Zach, love the game.
Yeah, it was a big next generation reveal. They revealed a lot of stuff. You can read about it this weekend on CBSSports.com. There's a plug. And I think that just based on what they're doing, it's kind of crazy the new technology that they're allowed to work with the things they've put in. It, you know, it's just very much a. I was just blown away by the realism. Like, even things like you'll love this. They're making wingspan matter.
Oh, I love it. I also love how after I talk up the Border Collie's ability to take direction and be coachable, mine is ruining a podcast. The idea that he can play NBA basketball is now looking utterly ridiculous. I love that wingspan is involved. I love that Anthony Davis was featured in the trailer. That trailer looked sick.
That's the thing is that after the trailer, people were just like, oh, you know, that's not actual gameplay. I can tell you for sure because I just played the game. Because they allowed us to play, you know, a short quarter between your Warriors and the Heat. That's the game. That's how it looks. Everything looks that realistic. The amount of detail they've gone into it. Yeah, it's the
way Durant walked, that odd walk he has. You can see it in the trailer. Same with Harden. I suspect that Steph Curry wasn't in the trailer, not Harrison Barnes, but Iguodala was, because he spurned Nike and Adidas.
Oh, I love. This is actually a topic that came up with myself and unnamed people.
Oh,
during and it's just it ignores the fact that the 2K Sports has had a relationship with Andre Iguodala for years.
I know, but you think that would be trumped by the other guy being way more famous. It's like, look, we've had a relationship with Horace Grant for years, you know, so he's going to be on the cover of our game instead of Michael Jordan. Now, it's not quite that level, but there is a discrepancy.
One has been an all-star before, and the other one's Steph Curry.
That's true. That is very true.
Maybe they just wanted all-stars in there, except for Anthony Davis.
I just feel like if I'm not the only one who noticed that and came to that conclusion, there could be some juice. There could be some juice to that. Also, he's only an 88.
He's only an 88. It's your favorite on fire team that is incendiary with his preseason hype, getting Sports Illustrated covers and such.
It's insane. Yeah, it's ridiculous. God, it all just feels like a setup for failure.
Oh, it absolutely is. This is what the Warriors do, right?
Nobody out there is saying, geez, we really got to hype the Warriors. They're not being hyped enough. It is an onslaught right now. It is it is crazy. I don't know what to think. And a lot of the analytical projections have them winning kind of in the 40s win total. And yet the conventional wisdom win projections, it's way up there in the 50s. And I'd be lying if I said that I knew what to think. I mean, they're doing some things in the preseason that I don't like. For instance, they weren't in the two games they used Harrison Barnes. They didn't go small at all. Now he has some sort of mystery injury, and we don't know what's up with that.
I think we know. Yeah.
Well, maybe. Yeah, it's hard. When you say that a guy is injured with a left foot inflammation, the problem is that inflammation isn't an injury. It's the symptom of an injury.
Right.
So why aren't you telling us what the injury is? It's almost like saying, he's out with a bleeding. He's just constantly bleeding. Like, well, what does that mean? Is he decapitated? Did he cut himself? I don't know what it is, and why are you not telling me? And why are you, as an organization, so strange about injuries every year?
He's out with detached cells. That could be a haircut. That could be a broken bone. We don't know.
We don't know. He's out with a body. Something on his body is incorrect. It's so odd to me that they aren't just upfront about these matters. Last year, there was a lot of shadiness surrounding what happened with Bogut. There is a history with this. There's a history of again, these are more things I don't perhaps want to get into. You know, all of Andres Biedrins' flu-like symptoms. It's not something I want to get into, but that's another strange one. Why is it flu-like symptoms?
Why can't it just be the flu? Because that's how you can get around players being hungover.
You said it, not me.
You know what's something weird? This has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I got a notification on my phone that three people I follow retweeted something from somebody else that I follow. Why is that a notification?
It's very important. It started happening to my phone too. You get a little excited, you get a little dopamine jolt of, ooh, somebody likes me. They're talking. Oh, no.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with me. I can't be fake humble if this has nothing to do with me.
Yeah, I got this is really not a boost to me, as Tony Douglas hasn't been a boost to the Warriors.
Huh? Oh, look at you.
Because they're having him play backup point guard in the preseason. I thought we firmly established that he can't do that. I thought this was known.
He was okay for Houston and Sacramento in that role last year, wasn't he?
Well, he worked with Harden because Harden essentially is a point guard.
Yeah, that's true.
When he's just out there trying to run the show with Spates, that doesn't work. The Warriors' backup point guard is Andre Iguodala. Perhaps they know that and they're just trying things out.
That is a little concerning. I mean, I think you and I talked about this one of the times in this offseason where the downgrade of the bench is kind of a concern.
It's real. I believe they want to move Klay Thompson to the bench and get that six-man score.
Ooh, what do you think about that? Because it seems like a lot of people on Twitter have a problem with that, and I actually don't mind the move.
I don't mind it at all. I just want to know what's wrong with Harrison Barnes and why he's been gone for 3 weeks.
Foot inflammation.
Yeah, there's no more question to ask. That's just it.
You know what? This is a silent killer right now. But as your dog was barking in the background, mine is hurling himself into me. Luckily, he's only 6 pounds, but he is literally throwing his body into my hand, trying to get me to scratch him.
Why did we buy these things?
I didn't buy this. This came with my lady friend.
Well, at least mine plays basketball with me, so there is that bonus. And I will say hi across the Skype line to the captain.
I love the captain says hi. I love the idea that you would go to the park to play some pickup ball, and you're like, oh, I just need 3 guys. I got my dog with me.
There's no maybe about it. I'm essentially a fugitive when I do it because there are no dogs allowed at the park. So I found this park near my place where I'm at all the way at the end of it, so I can see if a cop car pulls up, if somebody's entering. It takes them a long time to get over there, and I've actually seen a police car pull up to probably tell me not to do that, and I just instantly call them over and I get them on the leash. So I have it all set up, and it's not allowed, and I just play one-on-one with my dog.
Not to parrot Adam Carolla, but it is weird that dogs can't be in parks or on beaches, but they can be on airplanes. Or they can be in restaurants. Like, that's weird, right?
I just don't like these laws, Zach. I don't. My dog is a friendly guy. Save for the barking in the background, he's a good dude.
He's a terrible podcast host.
Well, that's true. That's his one flaw. But why am I bound by these rules to protect against pit bulls running at people and biting them? He's not going to do that. He just wants to play some basketball and be cute. You know? I should be able to bring him on a beach. I should be able to bring him into a park. It makes no sense to me.
I agree. You should be able to bring your confidence into the Warriors this season, but you don't sound that confident.
I don't sound that confident. I've seen some things that are a little bit inspiring. For instance, in the game before the last game, and my God, this preseason, not only was it endless, but the last game of it wasn't on TV, which is strange. I don't get why that was. But the one before that, against Sacramento, they were doing some really cool passing.
Was this the game against Sacramento you and I were supposed to watch in San Francisco, but then you blew me off? Is that the one?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure I have my timeline straight.
I didn't watch it live. I mean, I went to we had a romantic dinner. I watched it at midnight. Okay. So just so you know, I didn't just invent this whole scenario.
Sure. I had dinner in my hotel, so that's fun.
Just a lonely dinner. It's a gross, just burrito, a 7-Eleven burrito. Anyway, with 4 guys you can really pass, with Bogut, Lee, and Curry and Iguodala on the court at the same time, it almost, you're not going to like this reference. It almost reminds me of the Barcelona passing, where they're passing these short passes constantly to the point of nearly overpassing, and it was cool. I don't know if it will translate into effectiveness, but it looked beautiful.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I kind of went back and I was just looking at a bunch of the stats from this year, and I was trying to figure out why the Rockets shot so many more threes than the than the Warriors did, because at first I thought, oh, maybe it's just a pace thing, but I don't know, Warriors were top seven in pace or something like that. I mean, they were up there, and only, you know, maybe two possessions behind per game than the Rockets, and I'm like, that's probably not the significant makeup there, the significant difference. And so I was looking at it, and it just seemed like their ball movement was great. They passed a lot, but they would forego 3-point shots, at least in the regular season, if someone got open inside, whereas the Rockets would just fire away as soon as they got that pass.
Yeah, and it's why I'm a little ambivalent about the Rockets stylistically, where you like to see basketball the way the way the San Antonio Spurs do it. If you're a basketball nerd, yes, where they'll pass up a good shot to get a great shot.
Sure.
And it's all about getting a great shot. And the Rockets looked at the situation and they went, well, if it doesn't feel like a great shot, screw it. Just let it fly. It's a three. It's worth more statistically. And that's the smart play. And I wonder if at some level it's almost subversive to the idea of what basketball should be and what we enjoy, just because these shots are worth twice as much and you should just fling them up there without running a semblance of an offense.
Yeah, I like that personally. That's been my style in 2K for years.
Of course you like that.
Yeah.
That's been like every player who does that.
I really do. It's fun. And so that, actually when I sat down, I played with a complete stranger for the Next Generation model. I was the Warriors. He was the Heat. And I just came out chucking. Like, just dribbled up the court, one pass, fired a three. And I ended up winning the quarter I played because it was such a baffling style to this guy for some reason, which I just figured that's what everyone did.
But there is
some entertainment value in that, I think, because it's just letting it fly. It's playing loose. And I don't know if it's the best basketball, but it might be the best marriage.
There is, when Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are doing it. I don't know if it's so much that way when Jeremy Lin is doing it. It depends on the shooters.
That's a fair point.
It really all depends, but that's a minor quibble. I like the Rockets. I think they're fun. I just, sometimes it doesn't look like what NBA offense is supposed to be in terms of working to get a shot. It just looks like savvy accounting, you know?
Yes.
It just looks like gaming the system.
Yes. No, I think that, in a way I think it is, right? Because you're banking on the fact that you do get that extra point and that missed shots will be made up for in efficiency because of that extra point over the long haul.
Yes. Yeah. Now that's exactly what you're doing. I've actually argued about this point before with other people who find them aesthetically pleasing. Harlalobos Vulgaris is one of them, where he said that I must see some pretty fancy accounting or see some pretty entertaining accounting if that's how I feel about it. And it's a matter of taste. And in matters of taste, it's all very subjective. I'm super excited to watch the Rockets this year. They're another team, although like the Warriors, where optimism pervades, but we don't quite know how it's going to go.
Well, I mean, this means nothing because it's preseason predictions, and especially trying to predict record and win totals for in the preseason is just kind of a dumb exercise. But we did it because that's what you do when you have a basketball blog. And I came away like, just kind of like underselling the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Rockets, I felt like. And part of that was their respective fans would be like, oh, you don't believe in us. And it's not that. It's so much that there are only so many victories available in the regular season for the entire league. And it's hard to say five teams are going to win 55 games, right? That's a lot of wins. And so I just feel like at some point, it doesn't mean I don't think they're as good as the other teams. I just... It's kind of a flip of the coin of who I'm going to give the extra winner to.
If I were to lazily critique your predictions that you've done on the CBS site with Royce and with Matt, you might be giving the really bad teams a little too many wins.
That's probably fair. I do tend to just kind of with the teams I'm not sure about, like your Wizards, your Bucks, your Pistons, your
Kings.
Celtics, the Kings. I tend to kind of just throw them in the middle, and if I over on them, I'm okay with that, because I'm not going to pretend like, hey, this is you know me. I'm not so much into the hot sports takes. Like, I'm fine being in the middle and seeing what happens.
The team I don't get, and you and Matt mentioned this on your podcast, you both took the under. Vegas has Denver at 46 wins, and what and why and how, and look at that roster.
Doesn't that scare you?
It does. It completely scares me. I mean, it makes you wonder, what do they know? Have they heard that Gallinari is taking some sort of secret horse steroid that will heal up his knee and will make him jump 10 feet in the air? What do they know that I don't know?
Oh, man, if you had said that on Twitter, I would have retweeted that with a Danilo Gallinari. Oh, man.
We'll have to, tragedies.
Yeah, we should do that. We should do that when we're done recording this. I want you to say that. Leave enough room for me to put Danilo Gallinari.
Danilo Gallinari. No, that does not work at all. That does not work. That was a – nobody survived that. That was a flaming disaster.
Yeah, that was awful.
Anyway, but if you look at that roster, and you detach it from the notion of how many wins this team got last year and how often they've made the playoffs year after year, oh my God. I mean, you could see a roster like that winning 20-something games.
Yeah, and it's – there, you know, there's the argument that there's never been a team that won 57 games that didn't make the playoffs the next year, and you know, about 44, you know, probably in that 42 to 46 win range is probably where you have to be to make the playoffs in the West. So I guess if you feel like they're going to make the playoffs, and they have to win around that many games, but yeah, 46 just seems like, I mean, the big man rotation is Farid, who can't play defense, JaVale McGee, who can't think his way through a game, Timothy Mozgov, who just really not that. I mean, he's solid. Like, he can be a solid backup, but come on. J.J. Hickson, who's just empty calories in terms of his statistics.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Randolph's your fifth bit. Well, I guess Darrell Arthur is your fifth
defensive front court. It might be the worst defensive front court in basketball.
Yeah, and then the court is, there's firepower there. There's, you know, Ty Lawson and Andre Miller and Nate Robinson and Randy Foy. Like, those pieces can work, but I don't see how they work together.
Yeah, and there's nobody that great, and yes, they've had that before, but you make up for that by having a lot of good and the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. And I think people are ignoring that they weren't a particularly good defensive team before Iguodala got there. They were decent last year, but they also in the past, before Iguodala got there, they had Nene and they had Kufis. Now there's nobody. They should be dramatically worse on defense, and I don't know what Shaw is going to do. Maybe Vegas knows that Brian Shaw is the greatest coach of all time secretly, and that's why they're giving them the boost. I don't find that statistic about teams not missing the playoffs after they won 57 games relevant, because all of those teams didn't blow themselves up.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, maybe Brian Shaw just is that good, and that's the problem, is we don't know because he's never been a head coach before. And maybe, you know, maybe schematically he'll be great. Maybe he knows how to finagle, you know, that roster within. Maybe they'll trade Kenneth Faried and get a big player in. You know, that seems to be the news right now, is that they're shopping Kenneth Faried. So maybe that's where they bring in a player that brings them to 47 wins. And then on top of that, you know, there is that the idea of the altitude advantage, which I don't know that I believe in, but enough players seem to mention it to where it's got to be a mental thing. Well, it's a real advantage if you have the team to take advantage of it. But
act as though Denver's never been bad before. They've been bad and had that altitude advantage. I think they won 17 games one season with that altitude advantage. It's still possible for them to not be a good team and have a slight advantage at home.
The ghost of Vincent Yarborough lives on.
indeed. But maybe Vegas knows something. Maybe they know that Brian Shaw is looking to add an adorable little border collie to the defense to shore that up.
And I don't think I picked them to make the playoffs. I don't really remember what I did, but I'm worried about it because everything and people I've talked to who are, you know, believe it or not, I actually do think are smarter than me, have tried to talk me out of the Nuggets making the playoffs. And I still am just like, I don't know. This seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's just because we're so used to them. We're so used to them being in the playoffs. But my God, if they make the playoffs, somebody's massively underrated. Somebody on that team is massively underrated.
Maybe it's Wilson Chandler. Maybe Wilson's that good.
Maybe he is, and maybe Ty Lawson is. I remember there was a Hoops critic who was arguing that Ty Lawson was better than Steph Curry, and it's not even close.
I mean, we're done. We're done with that, right?
I think we're done with that. But if they make the playoffs again, there could be a resurgence in that sort of trope that we both found equally ridiculous.
Regardless of what your 2009 draft analysis was, like, there's a certain point where you have to adjust that.
Yes, and really, would a border collie have done worse defensively on Steph Ty Lawson did in that series?
I don't know. Maybe Steph is afraid of dogs. I've never seen one around Instagram pictures of his wife and his daughter.
Yeah, you know, you'd be scared. You've got that ankle and that dog's running right around that territory.
Oh, that's, God,
that's a fear factor right there.
I almost train my dog daily. And who's to say I won't turn an ankle one time trying to avoid crushing his tiny little head?
I'm not to say it. I might even predict it. We've already had these negative predictions where I predicted doom and gloom for the newly explosive Derrick Rose. Maybe you're next.
Yeah, maybe you're next. That's true. I one of the things that just made me think of one of my least favorite things is when people say at the end of the day, because
today you can't say that.
No, because what about at the beginning of the day? Isn't that more important? What if you, at the beginning of the day you just got it right? And so
I don't know why there's an end of the day where we make our judgments. It's not like I sit at my dinner table with my glass of wine as the sun sets and goes, and I go, oh, yes, this 'twas a good day. And at the end of the day, I've learned this. Who does that? It never happens.
Exactly. I'm judging constantly throughout the day. Every little thing that comes, I'm not waiting past 3 p.m. and then I can do my judgments. Like, I'm judging constantly. So I've decided that I'm going to trump at the end of the day with who's to say. Because really, there's no real rebuttal to who's to say. It's a half-assed version of to each their own, which is an entirely stupid. Like when people say to each their own, I'm always inclined to about child molesters. Is that to each their own?
It's a moral relativism to each their own.
Right. Exactly. Like so. Who's to say is the new at the end of the day and to each their own.
I just want you to start combining the phrases in a way almost like how Terry Bradshaw just rambles gibberish in those halftime highlights. I want you combining all the cliche phrases.
I wouldn't know because I only watch fantastic Shannon Sharpe and Dan Marino and that CBS halftime show. That's the only one I watch. So I don't even know what Terry Bradshaw does.
Yeah, I mean, the superior coverage of the NFL on CBS. We all know that.
Exactly.
It goes without saying completely. But at the end of the day, Zach, I believe that we intended to talk a little Thunder.
Yeah.
At
the beginning of the day, we were intending to talk about the Thunder. Who's to say we're not going to?
Who's to say if we're not too hard on the Thunder, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Who's to say that? Who's to say if the narrative surrounding this team is very negative despite all the success they've had and despite all these things that one could potentially be very excited about?
Spoiler alert, I am picking the Thunder to go to the finals in my needless preseason predictions, because I still look at that team and I'm like, they have two of the 5, 6, 7 best players in the world, however you want to rank that out, that's fine. And
your opinion of Kendrick Perkins baffles me.
I mean, it's clearly Perkins 1, Durant 2. That's just how it goes.
And Scott Brooks' eyes, yes.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know, I think we've gone too far the other way on Serge Ibaka. Like, he's not the best defender in the world, but he's a top 10, top 15 defender in the world. He's really good at it. He does change the game, and their bench might be good enough, you know? And you don't need that much support for those two players. And I think we forget that. I think a lot of people assume this team was going to the finals last year before Russell Westbrook went down with his knee injury.
They had one of the best point differentials in history.
In the league. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are excellent, and yet they don't really run an offense so much. And it's hard to be confident in Scott Brooks. And yet, again, I'm adding "and yet." That's my phrase.
Yeah.
Their defense was one of the best in the league. I'm not exactly sure how that happened, because very few of those guys are noted for being individually great on defense. Ibaka, he's a shot blocker, but the plus-minus didn't show him to be magnificent in his impact. And Thabo obviously is an excellent defender, and he's crucial to that. But beyond that, the other guys don't really get that credit. So they're a bit confusing that way, and I've played both sides of this. I thought the Harden trade was terrible. I'm pretty critical of it, but I think we can hold two thoughts in our head, which is that was a really bad trade, but this is still a really good team at the same time, and this team has proven to draft and develop talent very well. I mean, I'm getting on that Stephen.
I knew you were. You're buying into Stephen. I'm not sure I'm buying in. I will say this. I don't put a lot of stock into preseason, but he has looked a lot more confident than I thought he would actually look in the first like five active. Years. Yeah, he's mm-hmm. active, and sometimes that's all you want bigs to be, especially young bigs, is just be active. Can you catch a pass? Can you move around and, you know, and disrupt things, especially defensively? Yeah. And he's at least showing that he's competent, and that's kind of what you need to see from him at this point. I don't know that I'm not going to say that I've changed my view on him. I still don't think he's good, but he does look competent, and I'll give him that.
He's in the I don't know enough category. He didn't play a whole lot in college, and he's kind of he's a little bit raw. I've liked what I've seen in the preseason, and man, there's so much pressure on. He's a number 12 pick, right?
Right.
So much pressure on a number 12 pick to justify and validate that trade. So I can't wait to watch how he progresses. Jeremy Lamb,
Jay Lamb.
I'm not exactly sure how to feel about it.
I don't like
defensively.
Him.
He looks incredible. Just super quick and disruptive, but he also gambles a lot. He's young, and he hasn't gotten those outside shots to fall. He had that one great preseason game a few days ago, but a lot of those shots weren't shots that you want him taking in a game. So I'm not sure how that's going to shake out.
Yeah, I just don't like him. I don't like his offense at all. I think mm-hmm. that he reminds me of Gerald Green, a less athletic Gerald Green.
And I can see that.
But defensively, I will, you know, he's definitely not Gerald Green on defense. Like he can play a little defense. Yeah. And so I don't know. I don't know that his approach I feel like his approach would work if he was James Harden good. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you could probably say that about most guys in the league, but he's not. And so he kind of carries himself offensively like a superstar.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that talent, and he doesn't have the mental aspect of it. And I think that unless they can kind of rein him in a little bit, which maybe they can. Maybe it's just in preseason they've been like, go get comfortable out there.
He was taking such weird shots.
Yeah,
just off-balance fadeaways like your Kobe, and it was, what are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it's true. And I think maybe that's like, hey, get these out of your system. Get the jitters out, right?
Maybe that speaks to a confidence that will serve him well later on.
Yeah, and that could be the strategy. Like, I do know that I think if he plays this way in his minutes, even if it's strictly with like a second unit, if he does this in the regular season, I don't like him playing in the playoffs.
Well, I am not picking them for the finals, and it's a very subjective reason.
Ooh, who are you picking?
I just decided it. This is breaking news. I'm going over my predictions for ESPN right now, and it's so weird to say it. I'm going with the Clips.
Oh, you are on the wagon.
I'm on the Clipper wagon. But the reason I'm not picking the Thunder, the ever so subjective reason, is that if you have Derek Fisher still playing for your team,
sure,
there might be a fundamental lack of seriousness when it comes to your title chase. If this is the third year of Derek Fisher playing for your team. The third year of this after he was washed up maybe 4 years ago. I just can't abide that. I can't abide it, Zach.
You just can't account for the experience, the championship experience he has brought to the team. Kendrick Perkins has brought to the team. You know, it's just...
Talk about it like it's the sixth man and the experience is a ghost dunks the ball. Just an unseeable ghost who's going to finish your alley-oops.
I can see that ghost shoving Jeremy Lamb into the right spot in the corner.
It's actually Derek Fisher physically doing these things. It's just somewhat invisible to the referees for some reason.
I like the idea that you're not, or that you personally are concerned that we're underrating the Thunder, that we're too hard on them, because I just thought Royce Young brought up a great point on the podcast months ago where he said this team became too good too fast. Like they outdeveloped where the front office was projecting them, and it caused, you know, some decisions to be made, and the decisions have not gone over well with the public and even on the court in terms of like the James Harden trade. But there is something to say about this core is awesome. Like, are they what they could have been? No, probably not, because they got rid of one of the best players in the league. But this core is still unbelievable, and you can really see them being good enough to challenge for the title, to maybe even win the title. I don't know.
I almost feel that Kevin Durant is underrated. For all his fame, he's almost underrated. People forget that he was excellent in the 2012 finals, and we've talked about that. He was spectacular. If you don't win, it doesn't matter. But he is just this inexorable offensive force, and sometimes we take it for granted a little bit. We really do.
Sure.
And he's a lot of it. And right now it's starting. Brian Windhorst has come out with the piece about Durant in 2016. It is a few years away, but the reason people are talking about it, even if it's too early to discuss it in the view of many, is that we already have the narrative for why he left. That we already have that. We already have that. Even if he doesn't leave, we already have the narrative for why he left right now in our hands. They traded away his best friend on the team, and they didn't get, right now it seems...
They traded away Nick Collison? When did Nick Collison get traded?
That guy needs to play more. That's another
issue. He really does. He would.
Yes. Yes, he is very good.
I'm going to say this, and this is probably overrating him, but I think he's your modern-day Horace Grant.
Oh, I could see that. I could definitely see that. I like that. I like that analogy a lot.
Throw some goggles on him. We're good to go.
I'm glad you stopped to throw some goggles on him. I'm very happy that you stopped there. That's quite fortunate. But yes, we have the narrative. Even if they did keep Collison, they traded away Harden, someone Durant is close to, and it also demonstrated a certain cheapness that they didn't want to retain him. And now you're seeing Westbrook. It's getting, as I've said, a little mid-90s Orlando Magic-ish. You know, it will all seem ridiculous, this doom and gloom, if they capitalize on their manifest potential. But we have the narrative already. And we don't know if Kevin Durant is going to want to spend all of his 20s in Oklahoma City. That's a real consideration. I don't want to insult the good people down there, but that's probably not where most young millionaire athletes want to be for over a decade. So,
you know, he and Kevin Love work out quite a bit together. Could they be planning a coup de grace of sorts in L.A.?
Ah, man, that's an enticing possibility.
They pushed Kobe out the door in 2 years when he's ready. What if Love doesn't opt out in 2015? What if he decides to wait till 2016? And then the Lakers have had their two more years of Kobe. He gets whatever records he needs. He rides off into the sunset, and look who comes banging down the door to save the Lakers. Kevin Love and Kevin Durant. The two Kevins.
Fascinating.
That
would be fascinating. I'd also be fascinated if I don't see how it's possible, but the Rocket scenario that Jalen Rose predicted and floated out there, that Kevin Durant would sign with the Rockets to join Harden and Dwight Howard. I'm not sure how the money all works in that situation, but
we're already putting together trade packages of Omer Sheik and Chandler Parsons.
I apologize to Thunder fans. This cannot be comfortable.
No, yeah, you said
this has to be like people actively openly talking about your wife and just oh, their marriage isn't going that well.
What's great is you talked about like what a good person she was at first and how people are too hard on her and how she's really beautiful and probably, you know, just dynamite in so many areas. And then you buttered him up by saying, look, you've done really well. By the way, we're all trying to take her from you.
Yes, we're all trying to do that. This is
we're all having fantasies about your wife right now.
Nothing personal.
No, nothing personal. We just want to ruin your family.
It's nothing personal. Well, I think the other fear we're doing, and we're playing both sides of this. I don't think either of us has a strong opinion that.
Oh no, we're hedging hard.
Yeah, we hedge. We hedge. That's how you got to do it. You got to play both sides. You got to get the way to do it on the internet is to get everybody angry at you.
Yes.
You know, not just one faction. You need all of them. And so, if I'm doing the doom and gloom Thunder thing, I don't know that Westbrook is going to be out for as short a time as they say. So because teams always lie in the preseason and in the offseason about how long guys are out because they like that season ticket money and they like people being optimistic.
Yeah,
so if they do lie, they wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, he's probably out with knee inflammation right now.
Knee inflammation. It's just inflamed.
We gotta stop. You know what's really bugging me? And Westbrook brings this up. We gotta stop. Hey, this guy's coming back from a knee injury, and he dunked in practice.
Yeah,
we gotta stop these stories. They were there with Derrick Rose, and now they're there with Westbrook. I'm sure Rajon Rondo is gonna be doing 360s in practice in a month. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't mean. Did he dunk on somebody? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's not so hard for a guy of that level of athleticism to pull off. I would be. It's a story if he couldn't.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I expect him to be able to do that right after the surgery is complete.
Ricky Rubio just is coming.
Well, he's popped up on opiates.
Yeah, Ricky Rubio is coming back from a knee injury. The story today is that he can't throw a bounce pass anymore.
that would be totally analogous.
I have a question for you about Rubio real quick.
Oh,
last night it was, I believe, the fourth or fifth game of the preseason in which he shot 50% or better.
Ooh.
And there was a lot of arc on his jumper last night, which is not what we've seen consistently. Are you ready for the 50-40-90 Ricky Rubio?
Wait a second. There's always been arc on his shot.
No, it's a line drive.
It's sort of a shot put. It's kind of shot putty.
I'm telling you, it's a line drive.
It's a line drive.
Yeah, it's consistently a line drive. When it's going well, it has arc on it.
And you know what I'm talking about? The shot puttiness of the shot. That
oh
he
god!
Hits.
Oh yeah. No, it's a shot puttiness while trying to replicate the stance of a candelabra. He brings his legs really tight together. And kind of teeters a little bit, much like you would see a candelabra on the edge of a fireplace.
Oh, this is a great conversation of shooting motions that look funny. I would say that Derrick Rose, when he shoots a three and he does a little leg kick, he looks like a dolphin surfacing out of the water. Just that little just weird flick of the tail as he's going up.
Yes.
And Kevin Martin looks like he's trying to do some sort of maybe a cabbage patch when he's doing that weird sidewinder thing.
Man, I was watching I'm still watching it. I'm about three quarters of the way through the Pistons Wolves preseason game from tonight, and God, he draws some awful calls. Like he really he is if the Wolves are good this year. Yeah, if the Wolves are good this year and he's a big part of their offense, opposing fans are going to hate him because he draws some really bad calls.
Oh,
it's amazing.
You're going from the Berea to the Kevin Martin.
Kevin Love also gets some forced calls sometimes, but Martin is, my God.
But Martin especially does some things out there where it's just consciously disingenuous.
This Wolves team could have a Clippers effect where they go from league pass darlings to instantly hated teams by opposing fans.
Well, those fans would have to be really paying attention, but I've always found Martin to be more of a flopper than, say, Blake Griffin, who's been criticized for being an embellisher, where he'll shove off somebody and go flying, and it doesn't get noticed for whatever reason. Now,
right.
Granted, if I were an NBA player, I would be doing all that same stuff.
Oh, gotcha.
I did it when I played, when I played in high school and middle school. I would do stuff like flicking a guy's ear on an inbounds pass, and as he grabs his ear, running to get the pass. So I would be a hypocrite to completely scorn this with utter vituperation. But
look at you and your $10 words.
Oh, throwing them out there. I'm feeling loose, man. I've got the green tea in my system. I'm going. But I think it will piss off some fans if they pay attention to the Wolves. If the Wolves do well. That's the thing. If the Wolves are good, it will anger them. If they're not, nobody will care.
But if they're a playoff team, then it'll anger them, especially in their five games in the playoffs. I'm predicting one win no matter who they play. But I would say that if teams don't, or if fans don't pay attention that much, that will actually anger them more because they'll have just this brief glimpse of a Wolves team that possibly beat their team that flopped mm-hmm. around the floor or drew some really bad calls, and that will actually anger them as opposed to if they were really paying attention throughout the entire season.
I really want to see a Thunder Wolves playoff series. I wanted it longer. It was almost more intriguing with Kirilenko on the Wolves because Kirilenko Durant would have been pretty swell stuff there.
Those were fun matchups during the regular season too. Even for a Wolves team that was dead in the water pretty quickly because of the injuries, it was fun watching them go at each other.
Yeah. It was super fun matchup. I want to see Ibaka try to guard Kevin Love out on the perimeter. That's something that I'm hoping for.
And I still have stuck in my head from Rubio's first game. First game was against the Thunder. And pregame, everybody is in the Thunder locker room asking players about Ricky Rubio making his debut in Minnesota. And at a certain point, everyone kind of cleared out. And Russell Westbrook, I can't say it the way he said it, but basically, why do people care about Ricky Rubio? He's not even a starter. I mean, he was incensed.
Westbrook might be one of those guys where if you have a very distant way of appreciating him, then you'll like him and you'll find that fiery competitiveness quite enjoyable if he's sort of a TV character to you. Right. But if you actually had to interact with him, you might not feel that way.
Who's to say you wouldn't?
Who's to say you wouldn't? You know, I'm not saying he's a jerk. You know, I'm not saying that, even if that may or may not have been totally confirmed publicly by a few people and maybe also Royce. But he might be one of those guys where, yeah, like, oh, I love that guy. He's so fiery. He's just such a competitor. That's the kind of athlete I like. Fans are all about loving that kind of athlete.
Right.
But you wonder if they'd maintain that level of enthusiasm if they actually had to deal with that athlete.
Probably not. I mean, to each his own, but I don't see people embracing that in a full capacity.
I don't see it either. And again, I'm not claiming to know the full scope of the guy. He might be just one of those people where with media he's a certain way.
Yeah, and, on, and
man,
honestly,
with
if
media
I,
he's a certain way.
If I was an NBA player, I'd be just as against talking to the media as he is.
You think? I feel like I'm a narcissist and the media would give me a platform to expound in the talk. I might kind of love it. I feel like you would too. I think you're completely lying about this. You would totally soak it in.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think I am lying here. I think I would bask in the warmth of camera lights on me at all times.
Can we talk about the Durant piece I wrote a while ago that we were supposed to talk about last time because we're talking about media and players? It's a very self-indulgent segue. I'm pleading with you, Zach. I'm asking.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's spend 5 minutes on it. Is that okay?
5 minutes. Yeah, I got nothing. Nothing to follow that. I wrote a thing that was vaguely on this topic.
you wrote a thing about essentially, you know, players feeling like They've never played the game at this level, so how can they talk about us?
Right? Yes.
And I guess the response would – my response would be, well, you've never written on our level, yeah. So why are you able to tell us how to do our jobs? It's kind of a weird, like, pissing contest, right?
It is, and it's one they'll always win because people care more about what they do. We are the you see those crocodiles on those nature documentaries, and they have those birds that are just picking things out of the crocodile's teeth in order to live. I believe we are the birds in this analogy. So I understand why we're seen as something a little more leech-like, perhaps. Getting a living, siphoning off a living out of the thing people are actually interested in. But I do agree with that too, that you haven't written like we've written, and I'm sympathetic to their viewpoint because of all the secret stuff that we don't know about how plays are run, about the language for the plays that are run, and we're always trying to catch up to them and catch up to their knowledge, but they're not sharing everything about how this business goes with us, so it's really difficult for us to do so. So yes, they can feel as though, what do they know, they didn't play, but they're partially responsible for that because they're not telling us things.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, honestly, like, they're probably right. A lot of us are guessing. And, you know, there are some of us who are trying very hard to figure it out, to figure out what they know and stuff like that. But there's also a good chunk of the industry that doesn't care, isn't trying. And so I would probably let that jade my point of view and just kind of generalize it, you know, to say, well, they've never done it, so how can they know? And I think, yes. I think there is some fairness. But I also think, like, it's a weird symbiotic relationship in the sense that they kind of need, well, they don't need journalists specifically, but they need somebody to talk about what they do, right? Like that, like there's, you need interest drummed up in the league for the fans so that they can sell sponsorships, so that they can bring in money. And I'm not saying we bring in that money, but we are an outlet for the attention that the league needs. So you could easily replace it with something. Yeah. You could replace it with a Q&A for each player on Twitter every day, and that would drum up enough interest, right? There are enough users out there on Twitter to care. But as of right now, journalists are a platform for that spotlight. As small as it might be, it's enough right now to where, in a way, they need it. But in a way, in most ways, they probably don't.
I mean, I just coughed ever so professionally to the microphone. They need somebody, a historiographer, to kind of, much as we scoff at narrative, it's become this dirty word. There needs to be a narrative of what has happened.
Oh, I'm team narrative now.
Yeah. I love the narrative.
Yeah.
It's the story. Narrative isn't bad. We've turned it into some sort of pejorative term, but it's not like you would take your book to a publisher and they'd go, ugh, there's a narrative here.
This is great because a year ago you were going on about tropes left and right, and now you've come around to team narrative. I'm into this.
Oh, I like lashing out against the tropes and narratives I dislike and I disagree with, but we shouldn't conflate that with a trope or a narrative being bad just by itself. That's the wrong way to look at it. We just want the stories that we think are accurate, and we're part of the process of creating those stories. As for the players, I do believe they know more than us. They've got superior knowledge, but I don't trust them to necessarily do the rankings properly, because sometimes what impresses them is very niche to what they can do. They look at a guy who can do stuff that they can't do, like Jamal Crawford, and they'll totally overrate what that guy can do, and they'll often sort of ignore what some other guys can do. What that guy does is rare and is boring. The way that many players don't play like a Sheik plays is there are only so many 7-footers, so they're not exactly looking at what a Sheik does and thinking, oh man, I can't do that no matter how hard I practice. They're more inclined to look at a guy like Jamal Crawford and be impressed by that than a big dude.
Well, you know what I'm impressed with? That you
what?
Are getting married.
That might be a good note to end on. I'm impressed with me as well, Zach.
Yeah.
I'm very we share that in common. We're both very impressed by me.
We still have quite a ways to go until the actual wedding day comes. So who's to say it's actually going to happen? But as of right now, you're getting married.
Who's to say? I've been called a weasel in some circles, so you never know what I'm going to follow. But hopefully, I can remain true to this commitment.
You are. I mean, I've heard you are quite the weasel, and you know, karma can happen in mysterious ways.
It certainly can, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Ethan.